When the COVID vaccines were first being distributed to the public, the vaccine inserts were intentionally left blank because they were never safe and effective. And for those who did their own research, they were discovered to be deadly. The Moderna patent for this mRNA technology stated that they contain self-assembling lipid nanoparticle technology. And now that an estimated 600 million doses have been administered to the US public, Bill Gates admits this.
Making the mRNA is really easy and really cheap, and that's the magic of this thing. But there's no doubt in the next 5 years, we can, you know, we just need to mess around. There's a lot of lipid nanoparticles, and some are very self-assembling. There's no inherent reason it's not thermal stable, it's not cheap, and it's not scalable. And so, as over the 5 years, we fix that part of it, mature it, which is very typical, we'll be able to build factories worldwide that can make $2 vaccines with even less lead time than we've had to have here during this pandemic.
Bill says these mRNA shots can easily be programmed to administer any type of spike protein pathogen. And the Moderna patent lists several, over 100 pathogens that can be control released over time so that deaths will appear to be random and mysterious. Those injected are understandably having a hard time accepting this reality. And while they are busy trying to figure out where all the heart attacks, turbo cancer, and neurological disease is coming from, they are being told that it's due to climate change and that regular pandemics are to now be expected. During the rollout of the experimental shots, mainstream media pundit Chris Cuomo pushed for vaccine passports and attacked vaccine hesitancy.
How are they going to know who's vaccinated? You just said they showed the card. That's not the answer. The answer is a vaccine passport. Part of the reason that you're seeing what you're seeing in Florida is because of vaccine hesitancy.
Cuomo is now claiming to be injured from the vaccines.
So today, the New York Times released an article that's getting a lot of play that says that there are thousands of people who say they're still suffering side effects, they believe, from the vaccine. We know that vaccines can have unintended consequences, aka side effects, but nobody's really talking about it because they're too afraid of blame and they just want it to go away. But the problem is people like Sean and me and millions of others who still have weird stuff with their blood work and their lives and their feelings, you know, physically, are not going away.
And he is saying we need a 9/11 style commission to figure it all out.
You need to have a 9/11 style commission to figure out what worked and what didn't and what questions need to be answered, because it's not over. So not only are we not set up for the next pandemic, and there will be one, but we're not treating people, millions of people, who still have problems from the last one.
Cuomo assures us that there will be another pandemic, and this does seem to be the one sure thing in today's uncertain times. The released notes on the current discussions of the WHO pandemic treaty are all about profit margins. Disease X is coming. The US dollar is beyond saving, but while it still has a heartbeat, there are billions to be made by another fake pandemic. And the CEO of BlackRock, Larry Fink, is saying that because of artificial intelligence, continuing the depopulation agenda is a good thing.
I could argue in the developed countries, the big winners are countries that have shrinking populations. The social problems that one will have in substituting humans for machines is going to be far easier in those countries that have declining populations.
So long as we the people do nothing, the outcome is predictable. We will be slaves to a bureaucratic, non-human system run by machines. And if we want to remain human and save our souls, then we had better stop being complacent audience members and start getting involved. Pfizer whistleblower Dr. Michael Yeadon recently said the obvious. Without an insurrection, we can expect a new event that will trigger a digital ID connected to a digital currency and a wave of fake pandemics with mandated shots until the population reaches their desired levels. And as long as we remain stubbornly divided, we don't stand a chance.
All right, the entire report can be found on band.video. But yeah, did you see the headline in the New York Times about the vaccines causing massive harm? Yeah. It's Tuesday, May 7th, 2024. This is the InfoWars War Room. Brought to you by InfoWarsStore.com. Your election headquarters with 182 days until the presidential election. Now, I've got other news on my desk. A lot of news dealing with Trump, video clips, dealing with the court case that he's going through right now in court in New York City, as well as some other political developments. But this is crazy. This is truly crazy. It's the elephant that squeaked. The headline from the New York Times: thousands believe COVID vaccines harmed them. Is anyone listening? New York Times headline. Now, we played the opening report in the first five about how Chris Cuomo and other liberals, talk show hosts, that were told that they have to take the vaccine to go to work and to go on air and promote the vaccine, and their news broadcast brought to you by Pfizer. Everybody's on the same team, safe and effective. And now they're obstinate and they're going on air and they're talking about the side effects. How can you not be more pissed off? And why has Senator Ron Johnson or Senator Rand Paul faced such an uphill battle trying to get to the truth about the vaccines, trying to get to the truth about Anthony Fauci, the truth about the pandemic? Where is the outrage? And the New York Times says, is anyone listening? Is anyone listening? Are you listening at the New York Times? Have you been paying attention? Do you have any clue what's going on? This is old news. So why is it such a big deal? Well, this is the establishment mouthpiece. This is the establishment propaganda tool. Hell, you could probably go find the New York Times writing stories saying vaccines are safe and effective. And now they have this huge piece, and they take multiple victims of the vaccine and they say, is anyone listening to them? Well, gee, I don't know, New York Times. You called for the censorship of this show where we have featured vaccine injured people, where we've covered the court cases of the vaccines and the mandates and the damages and the mRNA and all the other ingredients. And then you write a story and say, is anyone listening? When it's the New York Times that's not listening, when it's the same establishment, the same propaganda mouthpieces that haven't been listening, that never listened, that told you safe and effective. Sean Barkovich, 54, a nurse practitioner in New York City, said that ever since his first COVID shot, standing up has sent his heart racing. And then the author here, Apoorva Mandavelli, spent more than a year talking to dozens of experts in vaccine science, policymakers, and people who said they had experienced serious side effects after receiving a COVID-19 vaccine. Okay, so you're years late to the game. That's fine. You're in the field. You now see what's going on. Where's the outrage? What about your workers at the New York Times that got forced to take it? What about all the readers of the New York Times that got forced to take it? And then you would call for censorship, and you say, oh, is anyone listening? And you call for censorship at the New York Times of the people that were reporting on this from day one. It's as if they've never even heard of the VAERS reports. We were pulling up the VAERS reports, the Vaccine Adverse Reaction website, the official government website. You can look at the first year, 2021, after the vaccine rollout, and the numbers of the vaccine adverse reactions are off the chart. Off the chart. Hell, I think I went to one of the vaccine clinics with that chart.
I mean, we probably still have the frickin' cardboard cutout sitting right back here in the studio somewhere. Yeah, go ahead and bring it in. We'll have the crew bring it in here. And that's just from 2021. So it's like, okay, hey, this is good, I guess. The New York Times now, the same establishment propaganda people are saying, yeah, the vaccines caused all this harm. But it's just like, oh, and then you say, is anyone listening? You're not listening. Here's the chart. Here, look, Rob has the chart right here. There you go. See, notice, is anything sticking out to that? Does anything stick out to you on this chart right here? Oh, I don't know, like, here's where the COVID vaccine came out, and then the numbers and the vaccine adverse reactions just go straight up like that. And so the New York Times, that's in 2021. We printed this out for a rally in 2021. All right, great, excellent job there. Total pro job there. I'm not going to make him stand there the whole show. You get the point. So we take that, we print that. We have multiples of those, by the way. We had others where I had to draw in the graphs because we just updated the 2022 and everything. But then the New York Times publishes a story in 2024, in May of 2024, and they say, oh, the COVID vaccines are causing all these reactions. It's really bad. Is anyone listening? They're the ones not listening. Within minutes of getting the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine, Michelle Zimmerman felt pain racing from her left arm up to her ear and down to her fingertips. Within days, she was unbearably sensitive to light and struggled to remember simple facts. She was 37 with a PhD in neuroscience and until then could ride her bicycle 20 miles, teach a dance class, and give a lecture on artificial intelligence all in the same day. Now, more than 3 years later, she lives with her parents. Eventually diagnosed with brain damage, she cannot work, drive, or even stand for long periods of time. They quote Michelle Zimmerman, "When I let myself think about the devastation of what this has done to my life and how much I've lost, sometimes it feels even too hard to comprehend," said Dr. Zimmerman. Believes her injury is due to a contaminated vaccine batch. No, they knew the vaccines were going to cause side effects. We already have the internal emails, the internal memos from before the rollout. They didn't even test these things. When they tested them on mice, this technology, they all died. The COVID vaccines, a triumph of science and public health, are estimated to have prevented millions of hospitalizations and deaths. Oh, but they caused them. Yet even the best vaccines produce rare but serious side effects. Oh, rare. You just have all these side effects. They're just, you know, showing you all of them. But it's so rare. And the COVID vaccines have been given to more than 270 million people in the United States in nearly 677 million doses. So that means obviously multiple people have gotten multiple vaccines. They're the ones getting the worst injuries. And we have enough of this data now. It's like you get three shots, you're pretty much flirting with about 50-50 shot. You're getting a serious injury after a third shot. And nobody even wants them anymore. Dr. Zimmerman's account is among the more harrowing, but thousands of Americans believe they suffered serious side effects following COVID vaccination. Just over 13,000 vaccine injury compensation claims have been filed with the federal government, but to little avail. Only 19% have been reviewed. Only 47 of those were deemed eligible for compensation, and only 12% have been paid out at an average of $3,600. What is the angle here? What is the angle here? Why would the New York Times, establishment rag, mouthpiece for the Democrats, propaganda agency, why would the New York Times be publishing this story in 2024 and talking about the side effects while at the same time trying to lessen the real numbers and the real damage done? Is this a is this a, oh, well, you know, we covered it and we talked about it, but it's not that bad. It's just there's some issues. Is this building up a new narrative to blame Trump for the deadly vaccines? What is the angle here? Why would the New York Times, after 3 years, decide they're going to go with the vaccine injury story? They know damn well this story's been around for 3 years. They know damn well the people who have had their sons and daughters die, all the athletes that have died or had heart attacks on the field. You watch a sports news channel, they'll have the bottom line. Never seen this before. They'll have on the bottom line injury reports, all these athletes dealing with blood clots. Never seen that before. So they know all this is going on. What is the angle now that they're going to report on vaccine side effects, but still not even give you the real story? Are they just trying to get ahead of the curve because they know this whole thing with the vaccines is coming down? So they just figure, well, let's get out ahead of it now. The claims are going to come out. There's going to be class action lawsuits. You know, Bob Barnes is in court right now in Louisiana, where I'm working to get him on the show later this week to give us an update. They could lose their immunity in a lot of these cases. And so that could open up the door for huge lawsuits. So maybe the New York Times knows what's coming. What is the angle here? Well, you could say they want clicks. They want traffic. It's a big headline. It's a big issue. Obviously, you know, liberals mostly probably took the vaccine, probably having the side effects the most. Probably took 2, 3, 4, still wearing a mask. What is the angle with this? Because they could have done that a year ago. They could have done that 2 years ago. But regardless. So here we are on May 7th, 2024. And we have crew members that have family that have had side effects. We have friends, family of the show that have died from the vaccine. And those sick bastards said it was safe and effective. And now the New York Times is going to come out and say, well, there are some serious side effects. Is anyone listening when Ernesto Ramirez comes into studio here and is crying because he lost his son right after the vaccine? Was the New York Times listening? What about the injured veterans that we've had on the show? Was the New York Times listening to that? They were forced to take a COVID vaccine and now they struggle to walk. They have seizures, strokes. Was the New York Times listening? Oh, they're going to write the story now. And they're going to say, well, there's some side effects. Maybe a couple thousand side effects. Yeah. Oh, no. It's millions and it's people dying. Was the New York Times listening when we had embalmers in the studio with their vials that showed the clotting post-vaccine? Oh, look, the New York Times headline, Pfizer results, coronavirus vaccine is safe. 95% effective. Do we have a date on that? It's probably like 2001 sometime. I can't see a date. I guess it's behind a paywall. And they'd say, well, we've got the N1 variant and the Omicron variant and this and the B1N1 variant. And now you need another vaccine and then a booster for your vaccine and then a booster for your booster. And then it's, oh, yeah. Yeah. That was from November 2020. Safe and effective, says the New York Times. And now May 2024. Thousands believed COVID vaccines harmed them. Is anyone listening? Now think about how hard this has to be for the left-wing liberal that was the vaccine fan and pusher and promoted it and took the selfies and took the sticker and said, if you don't take it, you can't come to my Thanksgiving. And now they're having the side effects And so the New York Times is reporting on the story. I mean, oh, and by the way, this is just, it just shows how the dam is breaking on this. There was a huge whistleblower guest on the Alex Jones show today talking about this. Greg Reese followed the report we played at the beginning of the show on the vaccines. And then I had this as my lead story. So, I mean, where are we at now? Where are we at now? Is it now cool for everybody to admit that the vaccine was deadly? Is Trump going to come around now? Is this all meant to maybe attack Trump? They're kind of setting up maybe an attack formation against Trump to blame him for the vaccine. And you say, well, Biden is the one that took responsibility. Biden is the one that mandated it. Do you think that matters? So there you go. See, it's like, I'm not going to come on here and wave a victory flag like, yeah, see, we told you so. The vaccines are deadly and they're killing everybody. Like, well, New York Times, maybe if you would have been saying that in 2020 instead of safe and effective, then maybe these people wouldn't be suffering. Maybe the millions of people wouldn't be suffering, wouldn't be dead. And then the sick editorial board at the New York Times will say in the headline, is anyone listening? And you bastards at the New York Times called for censorship of anybody critical of the vaccine. And the Democrat Party and the Biden White House, and we have the emails. I read them yesterday. The House Judiciary Committee published the emails where the Biden White House is petitioning Facebook and YouTube and these social media giants. And they're saying, you need to censor all negative information on the vaccines. And then they paid social media influencers. And they said, say you took the vaccine, say it's safe and effective, promote it to your friends. And they paid them to do that. And then they never said that was a paid ad. So then all these people get injured and all these people die. And then 4 years later, the New York Times says, oh, vaccines caused harm. But is anyone listening? You're sick. You're sick. You're sick. Stephen Colbert goes on air and does his little vaccine dance. You're sick. So no, I'm not feeling vindicated. I'm disgusted. I'm disgusted that they sat there knowing damn well these vaccines would harm you, and they lied to you, and they said safe and effective, and they took money, these political whores and these news whores, Stephen Hooker Colbert. Stormy Daniels has more integrity than Stephen Colbert. Stephen Colbert is a political media whore. And he sits up there like, oh, I'm a comedian. I'm a newsman. And he sits up there and he dances. Oh, but now it's the New York Times, Stephen. It's not InfoWars. See, why did they have to do all this propaganda? Why was all this propaganda necessary? Because the vaccine side effect story was getting out. The stories of those that got sick and died did get out. The turbo cancers, the whistleblowers, the inventors of the mRNA technology. So they had to run these propaganda campaigns on Stephen Whore Bear because they were losing the narrative, because they were losing the info war. And do you think that Stephen Colbert feels bad? Do you think that the New York Times feels bad? Do you think these people feel bad that said safe and effective and they published the stories and they promoted the propaganda and they got paid to do it? And now they say, look at all these side effects. Is anyone listening? I don't know. I guess you couldn't hear them through all the cash that was coming in. So, yeah, I mean, we could easily be saying, oh, totally vindicated. Look, now even the New York Times admits it. Look, it's Chris Cuomo. He admits it. Yeah, I mean, look at this sick puke. Bill de Blasio, oh, go get a shot. Oh, I got a cheeseburger and fries. Oh, like, oh, look at me. I'm a goofball. Oh, yeah. Look at how good this cheeseburger looks. Go get a vaccine. Go get a shot. Oh, safe and effective. You know. Did you enjoy a cheeseburger? Oh, yummy fries. Oh.
Is anyone listening? Are you guys listening? You promoted this vaccine? You said safe and effective. You said get a booster. You said get five. Are you listening? So that's what I'm like. Oh, it's the New York Times. So you have to listen to it now, right? I mean, geez, it's the esteemed New York Times. The vaccine lottery. They did a vaccine lottery. Do you remember how sick this crap is? No, I'm not up here waving a flag of victory. I'm sick. I'm disgusted. These people have no soul. They're whores. They got paid by the big pharmaceutical companies. They promoted their propaganda, and now they admit in the esteemed legacy New York Times how the vaccine caused harm. And they ask, is anyone listening? As they were the ones saying it was safe and effective, as they were the ones censoring anybody that promoted or published any criticism of the vaccines. And they say, is anybody listening? As they ignored all the critics and censored and silenced all the critics. Where does it go? Because there's an angle to this. Young boy dies in trial for Pfizer gene therapy. A young boy died in a trial for Pfizer's experimental gene therapy for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. The company told patient advocates Tuesday. So they'll probably bring that to market. See how great it is. Say it's safe and effective. Stephen Colbert will dance. And then 4 years later, they'll say, oops, yep, that vaccine did a lot of harm, might have killed you and your loved ones that we said it was safe and effective to. Oops, are you listening now? Are you listening? We're the New York Times. You should be listening now. It really sticks in my craw, I'll tell you. I'm going to move on here. But the New York Times coming out and admitting that the vaccines are hurting people, it's like, okay, I mean, yeah. Oh, you want to be honest for once? There's some angle. Chris Cuomo mad on his show about the vaccines giving him a side effect. That doesn't bring me any pleasure at all. I'm disgusted by these people. They knew it would do harm. They knew it was not safe or effective. They lied to you. And now they're going to act self-righteous like they care. And they're going to say, oh, we're up here at the New York Times and We're so sympathetic towards these victims of the vaccine side effects, and nobody's listening to them. No, I'm disgusted. Yeah, it's too bad. Chris Cuomo was forced to take the shot, just like others, and had a side effect. So we're gonna move on from it. Let's see. This is why they don't want InfoWars on the air, because we called out these side effects day one. Day one. This is why they can't have us on the air. It might mess with their power. It might mess with their profit center, Big Pharma. So it's important for you to support us at InfoWarsStore.com. And we have a sale going right now, things you need. Storable food supplies, 10% off all storable food supplies at InfoWarsStore.com. And it's insurance you can eat. You would rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it. And who knows what happens with Biden as president. But aside from potential collapse with our clown leadership, power outages, storms, disasters happen all the time. You want to have insurance you can eat. All storable foods, 10% off at InfoWarsStore.com. The year supply, the 6 month supply, the 3 month supply, the 4 week supply, all 10% off. Plus, the Alexa Pure Pro water filtration system, also 10% off. Filter your water, drink filtered water, use the water filters from InfoWarsStore.com. And it's your support there that keeps us off the air, or keeps us on the air. They want us off the air so that we can't report the truth about the vaccines. And then they come in 4 years later and they say, oh, nobody's listening to these vaccine side effects. No, you tried to censor us and have us off air so we couldn't report on them. So you shop at InfoWarsStore.com. We stay on the air. Now, let's get into the Trump case here.
and then some of the political developments. So the judge is threatening to jail Trump, saying he's gagged, he can't talk about the case. And of course, Trump leaves the courtroom every day and talks about the case, virtually daring the judge to incarcerate him. So he comes up with a new strategy now, and he leaves the courtroom and starts reading headlines. Here's what went down this morning.
I'm going to take you to Lower Manhattan and former President Trump.
Are you a victim of extortion?
The country is on fire. There are protests all over the country. I've never seen anything like this. Many graduation ceremonies are being canceled. They canceled, as you know, in Colombia. They're canceling a lot of them. And we have a president that just refuses to talk because he can't talk. You know that. And so does everyone else. Some of the statements made about this witch hunt on CNN, fake news CNN, Michael Moore said the proof of falsifying records has not been accomplished. On Good Morning America, they said, we heard that expense payments to lawyers are legal expenses. You pay a lawyer expenses payments. We didn't put it down as construction costs, the purchase of sheetrock, the electrical cost. The legal expense that we paid was put down as legal expense. There's nothing else you could say. You don't have to put down anything, I guess. But we put down legal expense was legal expense. Is that a correct statement, Mr. Attorney? And everyone's saying, oh, gee, that's the fraud. That's what they're trying to get us on, the fact that we call a legal expense a legal expense. They marked it down in the books. The check was signed. And the other thing, this was approved by all agencies. Everybody saw this. There was nothing being hidden at all. That's what they're all writing now. There's been nothing hidden. And it went through agencies, and I guess it went through the IRS also. It went through IRS. It went through the FEC. It went through everything. Also, NBC Today showed the challengers that there is no smoking gun, no email or tape to prove the president's intent. They don't have a way to prove that. That's NBC Today show. And then Fox News, Katie Kasky, said that the gag order is unconstitutional, which of course it is. The gag order is unconstitutional. So with all that's going on, they have no case. Every single legal scholar that I see, I mean, maybe there's somebody out there, some whack job, but the virtually everyone that I've seen has said there's absolutely no case. It's a case that shouldn't have been brought. The previous DA wouldn't bring it. Brand didn't want to bring it, and he brought it because I'm running in number one place. This all comes out of the White House and crooked Joe Biden. This comes from the White House, and it's all Biden because it's an attack on his political opponent. That hasn't happened in this country. It does happen in third world countries, but it hasn't happened in this country, and it's a shame. And the trial is a very unfair trial. It's a very, very unfair trial. The good news is they have nothing. Thank you.
Why is it unfair?
All right, now ask yourself, what is the crime they're even alleging Donald Trump committed? Nobody even knows. They just say hush money, hush money. Well, what crime? What is the criminal statute? Of course, Trump is the one that's the victim here, not just of the political persecution, but of extortion. That is, according to other people familiar with the situation. But let's remember, as Stormy Daniels sits in the courtroom as an expert witness. How about that? The porno actress is up there. She's their expert witness. You think she went to the judge's quarters for a little sidebar? So she's their expert witness, but there's a problem because you have a document signed by her where she says, literally this is the quote with her signature, "Rumors that I have received hush money from Donald Trump are completely false." So, and that's one of two sworn statements that she signed, by the way. Two. She signed two, saying there was no, quote, hush money. Even in her signed letters said no hush money. And so, but Trump's in the court for hush money. and she's their star witness. And it gets a little comical here. I mean, we're just, this is the level of things now. Stormy Daniels spanked pajama-clad Donald Trump with Forbes magazine in secret hotel rendezvous.
Come on, man. Oh, man.
Stormy Daniels spanking Trump with the Forbes magazine. Bent him over and whacked him. Thank you, Stormy. Thank you, Stormy. Let's go with the left cheek now. Yes, that's the one. And then maybe get the Playboy over there. Yes, the one where you're featured on the back page. This is ridiculous. Daniels described her infamous alleged encounter with the future president in 2006 during court proceedings. Stormy Daniels, the porn star who claims to have slept with U.S. President Donald Trump over a decade ago, says their first meeting involved silk pajamas, and spankings. This was her testimony today.
Donald Trump liked wearing silk pajamas and getting light spankings from Stormy Daniels. Oh, okay.
All right, let's try to get serious and put that Forbes magazine down. Well, New York City Mayor Eric Adams says Rikers Island is prepared for Trump. What a joke. Rikers Island. They're going to send him to Rikers Island. I wonder what's going to happen with Secret Service when that goes down. What an absolute disaster. And Donald Trump has just left the courtroom. We'll see if he has anything up his sleeve for the rest of the evening, but he has officially now left the courtroom. This whole thing is a clown show. And they got Stormy Daniels up there parading around and making jokes and talking about silk pajama spankings. Avenatti accuses Stormy Daniels of falsification of business record and fraud as she testifies against Trump. Now, of course, Avenatti sitting in jail and somehow getting these statements out, said that Stormy and her lawyer are liars, and says that he has direct knowledge that the whole thing was an extortion of Donald Trump. Jailed attorney Michael Avenatti accused Stormy Daniels of committing the same crimes Donald Trump has been charged with in the New York hush money trial. Well, yeah, that's it. That's the inversion. That's the game. That's the game. And of course, Stormy Daniels actually owes Trump like $122,000. Because of this crap. So they're saying that it's a criminal bookkeeping error and Trump isn't allowed to talk about it, so he's gagged. And if he does talk about it, then they're going to send him to Rikers Island. And it's a porn star up there talking about spanking Donald Trump in silk pajamas. I mean, this is... We're just on the Looney Tunes land. Stormy Daniels blows it. Stormy Daniels blows it on the witness stand. Blows it. Come on, man. Stormy Daniels blows it on camera, blows it on the witness stand, makes scripted jokes in courtroom to win over jury, but nobody is laughing. It's all a big show. Yeah, who knows? She'll probably flash the jury. She'll flash the jury. She'll flash the judge. Like, oh, Trump. Oh, oh. And, oh, my top. Oh, yes, I believe that woman. I believe her now. So that's star witness number one. And then you have their other witness, Michael Cohen, a known con man. Michael Cohen will, this is just his history here, some headlines. Michael Cohen will not face sanctions after generating fake court cases with AI. Remember that deal? He used AI to generate fake court cases, and the judge is looking at it. He's like, I've never heard of these cases. What is this? It was literally fake. The AI made them up.
Judge says Michael Cohen may have committed perjury, denies early probation end. So your star witness is Stormy Daniels up there, cracking jokes and smiling at the jury and the judge as she talks about, you know, spanking Donald Trump. And then you have Cohen, a known con man who uses AI to fake court cases for his court filings. Meanwhile, as all this is going on outside, a plane was flying over New York City that had a banner behind it that said, "When you indict him, you unite us, MAGA." And this was flying over in the skies while Trump was in court. And there's no doubt the more they go after Trump, the higher his poll ratings go up, and the more people will view him as legitimate street cred, if you will. I guess they figure this is their best case to try to get rid of Trump, is this bookkeeping error claim. What's the crime? Nobody wanted to touch it. Alvin Bragg didn't want to touch it. The FEC didn't want to touch it. And they say, Trump is using campaign funds to pay for lawyers and all this other stuff. And then it's Biden that's doing that exact thing. It's not even a debate. It's mainstream news. Joe Biden using campaign money to pay for lawyers. Is he going to get charged? Is that hush money? Does Joe Biden have headlines talking about hush money because he's paying for lawyers with campaign funds? By the way, what was the number? It was like in 2018. Let's see if the crew can find this one. Remember they had that story and it was all about they had a congressional budget. It was like $21 million. They had a congressional budget. It was a hush money budget. They had a congressional hush money budget. It was like $21 million. And it was all these members of Congress that had to pay off people that were making claims against them, likely in sexual nature, sexual abuse, whatever. And they had a $21 million hush money budget. So that's good, though. So Biden can use campaign funds to pay for his legal bills. Trump can't. And then they say, oh, it's a crime. Trump had hush money with Stormy Daniels, even though she signed documents saying the exact opposite. And then Congress has a sexual assault, or, you know, claim hush money budget. It's a joke. Must be nice. Must be nice. Well, things aren't going so well for Jack Smith down in Florida. Judge Cannon postpones key deadline in classified documents case against Trump after Jack Smith admits to evidence tampering. That's right. Special Counsel Jack Smith admitted to tampering with evidence. Yeah, there it is. Congress paid out $17 million in settlements. Here's why we know so little about that money. Oh, I can't imagine. Why we know so little about that money. I just can't even imagine. They have congressional hush money budgets. You got Stormy Daniels in a courtroom talking about spanking Trump in silk pajamas. It's great. It's wonderful. And this whole documents case in Florida looks like it was a giant setup too. And Jack Smith is caught evidence tampering. Look at that. Look at that headline in the New York Times. Why does Congress make taxpayers pay hush money? Senate leaders are undermining efforts to bring full accountability for sexual harassment by members of Congress and other federal workers. And then you got Jack Smith tampering with evidence. He admits it. The whole thing was a setup. So it's really not going for well. All they have is the fake hush money case and a corrupt judge to try to put Donald Trump in jail. I mean, this isn't going to stop him from winning the election. His poll numbers are going up. And then the state Senate of Georgia are trying to off-rail Fannie Willis,
And so they've called for her to testify before a Senate committee. She's refusing to do so. And look at what she's doing here. She's hiding behind her skin color is what she's doing. And so she has this press conference and she surrounds herself with all black people. And she says, I'm not showing up to any committee hearing. I'm not the criminal here. I don't have to show up. I'm above the law. So here's Fannie Willis saying that at a press conference, clip 8.
Well, first of all, I don't even think they have the authority to subpoena me, but they need to learn the law.
So will you appear, yes or no?
I will not appear to anything that is unlawful. And I have not broken the law in any way. I've said it, you know, I'll say it amongst these leaders. I'm sorry folks get pissed off that everybody gets treated evenly.
All right. I think she answered that very well.
And then they got this guy up there. He's got his cane. I think she answered that. She answered that well. Stomps his cane down. I mean, it's just a clown show, man. I don't think this is over for Fannie Willis, by the way. I don't think this is over for Fannie Willis at all. And she already got embarrassed when she was on the stand dealing with the payouts to her lover boy. They were working together on these cases against Trump and then doing massive payouts to her lover boy. Oh, no. Those are legal fees to travel around the country. Right. Yeah. He was just making like 10 times any other defense attorney was making or a prosecuting attorney was making as they were sleeping together. And then they lied about it. Yeah. That's all that was. No big deal. I might get subpoenaed. I'm being told I have to testify. No, I'm above the law. He says, I am the law. And don't you see, I'm here with all these black folks. I'm above the law and I'm black. So you're racist. You're racist if you think I have to be held to a standard. You're racist if you think I need to testify before a Senate committee. You don't want to be a racist now, do you? Rafa last night. We might get into that here. I want to play, though, Mike Lee. It just shows that they really are afraid that Trump is going to get in and stop their money laundering operation through Ukraine. And so they signed that bill to ensure that the funds would continue to go, even if Trump tried to stop them. But I believe this has already been settled at the Supreme Court. I believe it was Richard Nixon. And Congress passed a spending bill. It might have been for a war, but Nixon said, no, we're not going to spend it. It went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, well, if the Congress approves the spending, the president can't suspend the spending. It goes on anyway. So there's already a precedent that if Congress approves spending, that Trump couldn't stop it anyway. So the fact that they're really doubling down on that and ensuring that the money will continue to go to Ukraine, they need that thievery to continue. They need that boondoggle. They need that money laundering operation to continue. It's what makes them rich, I guess. So here's Senator Mike Lee talking about that and how what Mike Lee now thinks is their new long-term forever war in Ukraine in clip 6.
Look, I've warned about the risks of Ukraine becoming the next forever war for the United States. Proxy wars, where the United States of America is concerned, where any world power is concerned, eventually have a high likelihood of becoming hot direct wars, not proxy, but, hot conflicts. With talks of a potential 10-year bilateral security guarantee on terms potentially even more generous than even those currently afforded to NATO members, which Ukraine, of course, is not a NATO member, the Biden administration's goal of long-term entanglement with Ukraine is becoming abundantly and increasingly clear. It's also clear that this is a move to tie the hands of future presidents and of President Trump when he becomes the 47th president of the United States. Look, the idea that such an agreement can even be struck entirely by the incumbent president of the United States is laughable, and it's hugely constitutionally problematic. It's anti-democratic. It's anti-constitutional, you might say. Such an agreement is tantamount almost to a treaty, and therefore must, without question, be submitted to the Senate as a treaty, and that requires a two-thirds supermajority approval to ratify. In the meantime, any attempts to circumvent the Senate in that effort should be met with absolute fierce opposition. But in the meantime, we're stuck with a real problem. And the Republicans made a promise starting, in November or December of last year, that we wouldn't be sending more money to Ukraine until we fixed our border, until we tied Joe Biden's hands and made it so he couldn't continue to invite this torrent of invading illegal immigrants to come into our country. And we failed, and it's as though a whole lot of Republicans just forgot about the promise and expect their constituents to forget as well.
This is the deep state ensuring their money laundering operation. But think about it. When you elect a president or a senator or a member of the House, foreign policy comes into play. So the American people might say, well, we don't want to elect another Republican or Democrat that's going to continue to send all this money to Ukraine or wherever. But, oh, see, the 118th Congress, I think it's the 118th. Oh, no, they just decided for the next 10 sessions that we're going to fund this Ukraine forever. Oh, no, but the American people voted for a new Congress. The American people voted for a new president. They don't like the foreign aid spending. Well, it's too bad. This Congress from 10 years ago, they already voted on this. So, yeah. Oh, we're fighting for democracy here. This is all about democracy. And we're fighting for democracy in Ukraine, too, where they cancel elections. It's ridiculous. By the way, Senator Mike Lee put up this poll yesterday. Should the U.S. stop funding the U.N.? 25,000 votes, 96% said yes. So we're basically just held hostage by our government at this point. And that's why Maxine Waters is like, well, I want to know what they're doing in the woods shooting guns. We need to know what the Republicans are doing. We're held hostage by our criminal government. And Maxine Waters says, I want to know what Trump supporters are doing in the woods. They're out in the hills training with guns. No, she knows that the feds are running more fed entrapment schemes like they did with the Michigan Whitmer kidnapping case. So, yeah, I would say it's probably a safe bet that you have federal entrapment schemes where these federal agents pose as Trump supporters, whatever, conservative, Second Amendment activists, and there'll be a group of 20 feds, and then they'll get three or four suckers to fall into this trap. Exact same thing that happened with the Governor Whitmer case. And they'll go out into the woods or the hills, as Maxine Waters says, and they'll learn how to train with guns. And they're setting it all up. And that's why they say, oh, if Trump loses, the Republicans are going to start a civil war. So they're already building the narrative. And I haven't seen the new Civil War movie. Alex Jones did a breakdown of that. But see, they're setting the table. They're building the narrative. They've already got their entrapment schemes going. They're getting ahead of it. Oh, if Trump loses, the Republicans are going to start civil war. Trump supporters are going to start civil war. We need to know what they're doing in the hills. So they've already probably got these multiple groups with a few unintellectual individuals out there training with guns, thinking they're in some Trump militia that's going to save the country. And then if Trump loses, they'll arrest them. They'll do a giant press conference. They'll do a whole photo opportunity. They'll lay out the guns and the videos and everything of them training. And they'll say, see, we told you the Trump supporters were out in the hills. So Maxine Waters is a complete lunatic, but she's kind of tipping their hand here at the same time. And so then the American people say, well, gee, okay, we're about to have 2020 round two. Donald Trump will get 40,000-50,000 people at a rally. Joe Biden won't even have a rally. Donald Trump will sell 10 million hats. Joe Biden won't sell 10 hats. I mean, I can go on and on. You get the point. Trump wins. But then Biden stays president and has, you know, one more vote than Trump at the last minute, the same thing we saw in 2020. But then the average American is going to say, oh, no. Oh, no. I'm not protesting. I'm not going and waving a flag. I'm not going to the Capitol. I'm not going outside. I'm not waving a sign. I'm not saying Trump really won because now you're going to go to jail. You're going to go to jail, and they're going to call you a terrorist. And so they're already building this, and they've already got their groups ready to go. And so it won't be like they have to have some day like January 6th. They've already got these groups out in the woods, out in the hills, whatever. And it'll be 20 feds, three people, and then they'll say, oh, see, we told you the Trump supporters were forming a militia in case Trump lost, and then they'll arrest him the day after. And then there won't be a Trump supporter that'll ever go do a protest or a rally or wave a flag or go to the Capitol ever again, because the message is loud and clear. The Democrats have conquered this country, and any resistance will result in jail time. But we're being held hostage by our corrupt criminal government. You could have polls like this all day long, and we do. Elon Musk puts them out. But Senator Mike Lee, should the U.S. stop funding the U.N. and 25,000 people vote and 96% say yes? So, you see, that's what I'm saying. None of this policy, none of this funding, nobody supports this crap. We just have no say anymore. But now, and it's not just the Israeli lobby, but see, that's the big hot topic. And now, you're not going to talk about the Israeli lobby in Congress because that's anti-Semitic. And you notice, see, Elon Musk operates in very nuanced and subtle ways. And once you kind of get it and see it, it makes more sense. Like, why did Elon Musk recently decide to reinstate Nick Fuentes' account? Well, that's because of the anti-Semitic speech bill, 100%. Now, I'm not saying Elon Musk is setting Nick Fuentes up. I'm saying Elon Musk can't come out and directly say anything against this anti-Semite speech bill. So instead, his statement is, I'm going to reinstate Fuentes on X. But notice what he says. Elon Musk says, okay, I will give Nick Fuentes his account back as long as he doesn't break the law. Oh, but then they just try to pass a law that says any criticism of Israel or reading the New Testament is a crime. Oh, so what? So if Nick Fuentes comes out and says Jews killed Jesus, he committed the crime, he gets banned on Twitter again. So again, I'm not saying Musk is setting Fuentes up. I'm saying Musk isn't going to directly address this himself, so he kind of just sends out this other passive-aggressive, nuanced response. And he's done it before, too. Like, there's some other stuff behind, you know, bringing Alex and InfoWars back, and I'm not going to get into that right now. But if you can figure it out for yourself. Like, what do Alex Jones and Elon Musk have in common? Oh. But okay, getting back to the point here. So now, hey, you don't want to fund the UN. You don't want to fund all these wars. Maybe you don't want a vaccine mandate. Oh, but what do they do? The Biden White House says, we're going to censor any vaccine criticism. Congress says, we're going to make any anti-Semite speech a crime. So, you can't be critical of the pharmaceutical industrial complex, you get censored. Oh, you can't be critical of Israel's influence on our Congress and our foreign policy, or that's a crime. Oh, you see how that goes? And so you get held hostage by your government. And then you'll have to sit there, watch Joe Biden win another stolen election, and they'll roll out all of these suckers that fell for the federal entrapment, like the Michigan Governor Whitmer kidnapping case, and they'll say, look, we rounded up these Trump supporters. They were forming militias in the woods. And they were training with firearms on how to take the country back for Trump. And they'll roll it out like the day or the week after Trump loses. So this is just a card. This is just like a folder that they have in their playbook that they may run with. But you can see they got all these different operations running against Trump right now. But okay, let's do this. Let's quickly go to Biden here, and we'll get into some of this other political news. Biden was slurring and stuttering and mumbling through another
speech. But this is the ringer right here, Joe Biden. What is he talking about here in clip three?
Can you imagine a kid 2 years old saying, "Mom, don't take me across Rio Grande. It's against the law. Give me a break." These have been model citizens.
A two-year-old tells his mom, "Don't take me across the Rio Grande. It's against the law." These are model citizens, he says. What in the hell is he talking about? Oh, were the illegal immigrants that beat up the police officers model citizens? What about the illegal immigrant that killed that nursing student down in Georgia? Or the dozens of illegal immigrants that have killed people or raped kids? Are they model citizens, Joe? Oh, that too. He's thinking about two-year-olds. Interesting. Thinking about two-year-olds, Joe Biden, saying, "Oh, don't take me across the Rio Grande." I mean, it doesn't even make sense. And then he gets more, and it's all about trying to win the Latino vote. Or maybe in their eyes, it's the illegal non-citizen vote. So here he is talking about why Joe Biden's really talking about Latinos a lot. By the way, didn't they change it now? I think the proper politically correct term is Latin now, okay? So listen here, bigots. Use the right word. It's Latin with an E at the end. Okay? Latin. And you have to say it with a bit of a snobbish air. Latin. They said that's the new politically correct thing. So, okay, Latinx is out. Latin is in. So here's Biden, why he's so focused on Latins in clip four.
"And you're the future of our nation. You know, everybody says, I've always been so fundamentally focused on Latinos. Simple proposition. You make up 28% of the students in America. Think about it.
Think about it.
28%.
Why is he yelling?
Of all the students in high school and grade school in America are Latino. And I want to tell you, the idea we're not going to pay attention is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Look, we have your backs, and you've had ours. In March in Nevada, I invited the most ambitious housing plan for decades to come into being."
This is painful. It's painful to watch this guy. He can't even talk. It's like he has marbles in his mouth. Why is he yelling? It's just bad. Why? You want to know why? You want to know why Biden is focusing on Latinos? Because of these latest poll numbers in clip two.
"And Biden seems to be struggling with key demographic groups that he would need to win and win big if he stands a chance of being reelected.
John, there is significant softness in the support for Joe Biden among core Democrats. In this poll, he's carrying black voters by 61 points. Well, that sounds like a lot, but he carried them by 84 points back in 2020. Latino voters, a very slight Biden edge in this poll, but it was a 21-point advantage in the exit polls back in 2020. And among younger voters, under 30, we're actually seeing Trump with a slight edge. That was a big win for Biden last time around. It's particularly stark to see that difference among voters of color. Black voters under age 50, far less likely in this poll to say they're supporting Joe Biden than older black voters."
So he's hemorrhaging support from Latinos. That's why he's so focused. But it's every group. As we now have a track record. And so, you know, I would advise you, don't take anything Trump says or does too close to heart these days. He's trying to win election, and everything he says and does is about trying to get more votes than he loses or more votes than Joe Biden. So just understand that's the game he's playing. We have a good circumstance now where we have two presidential candidates that have a track record to run on, and we have an experience as American citizens under these two presidents, 4 years each. So we know what life was like under Joe Biden. We know what life was like under Donald Trump. Your options are clear. So forget about whatever Joe Biden says. Oh, we love Latinos. Whatever Donald Trump says. Oh, he loves Mike Johnson. It's all politics. It's all politics trying to win an election. We know what life was like under Trump versus under Biden. That's what matters. Now, this is, so you heard Joe Biden talk about they have these new housing policies and they're basically trying to give away houses to anybody that's not white.
And they pretty much admit that. But here's Kamala Harris showing you how dumb she truly is. I mean, this is just stunning stuff from Kamala Harris. And I guess she thinks you're stupid and you don't know how appraisals work. But there's some other hidden gem here, and I'll get to that at the end. So here's Kamala Harris virtue signaling and talking about the Biden new homeowner policy and just crapping out of her mouth about appraisal values in clip 7.
We are also calling out and addressing the issue of racial bias appraisals.
Stop the tape. Oh, my gosh. I don't know if I can do this. This is like torture. Her voice is like torture. And she's always changing her voice. She's always changing her cadence. You remember that they have actual professional coaches. They have speech coaches and body language coaches that are trying to make Kamala Harris more palatable as a politician. And it's just, it's not working, whatever it is. She's better off being, you know, the Montel Williams arm piece type. I mean, just go out there and be yourself, Kamala. This is like nails on a chalkboard. I'm so sorry. This is, I don't know if I should do this. This is like torture. This is cruel and unusual punishment. I'm potentially breaking the law by playing this clip. So try to make it through the torture and the torment of her fake voice and her forced cadence. And let's actually try to address what she's talking about. All right, just brace yourself. Go ahead. Start it over. Let's get the full torture technique. Go ahead.
We are also calling out and addressing the issue of racial bias in home appraisals.
Pardon. Racial bias in home appraisals. Racial bias in home appraisals. Do you understand how many assumptions are made with that one statement? You're basically assuming that everyone appraising a house is white. Everybody getting an appraisal is not white, or that somehow in the process, demographics even come into the equation at all. By the way, most of these appraisals are just drawn, they go in front of an appraisal board that's run by the government. They don't know who occupies the house. It's probably even run by AI at this point. And they just look at the square footage, the year it was made, and the location, they just give it an appraisal value. And then they might come in and the real estate agent or whatever might look at the house and say, okay, it's in good shape, it's in bad shape. Where does race even come into the equation here? What is she even talking about? Only a liberal Democrat who thinks about race and identity politics 24/7 would believe that somehow your skin color is a part of the appraisal process. I mean, it's complete lunacy. Continue.
We know the stories. We've heard the stories.
Oh, this is great.
The stories like of a black family that gets a home appraisal and the valuation is much lower than they know what their home is worth. So they get a new appraisal, only this time they replace their photographs with photos of a family friend who is white, and they ask that family to bring in the appraiser. And the new appraisal is much higher.
All right.
We've heard those stories.
Pause it right there. We've heard those stories. Now again, folks, appraisal value is one thing. The market determines the house. The price of the house. What if the appraiser is black or Hispanic? Like most real estate agents in Texas are Hispanic. So what the hell is she even talking about? All right, now this is where it gets crazy. And maybe this is where the crew comes into play here, if they can find this. I don't watch Cedric the Entertainer. It's a TV show. I don't watch the show, but apparently the circumstances that she just laid out there are actually from an episode of Cedric the Entertainer. Did she just take a script from a TV show and then apply it to some virtue signaling identity politics speech about home appraisal values? Again, this is
when I was going to find this clip and I was watching other people do commentary on it and reading comments, multiple people said, that's a script from a Cedric the Entertainer show, where Cedric the Entertainer, who's a black comedian and the star of a show he used to host, or it was like a sitcom, I guess, and they're trying, his black family is trying to sell their house, and so he goes to his white friend neighbor, and they just replace the photos, and then they're able to get a higher value. So I never saw that episode. That's what people are saying. But you would ask, where is Kamala Harris getting this? What stories, in what circumstances has this ever happened? And why would a real estate agent want to devalue a house based off of the homeowner's skin color? And the same thing goes for the government. Why would the government, and by the way, if the government's appraising your house, you probably want it to be lower value for your property taxes. So congratulations. The government wants you to have a higher value because they want to tax you more. So it's just like, this is so nonsensical. Only a moron would say anything like that. That's Kamala Harris. But did she just take an episode of the Cedric the Entertainer show and then use it to make a political point? We should monitor the comments, because I don't know. I've never seen that show, but other people's commentary on this and other comments on this were saying, no, that's directly out of a Cedric the Entertainer show. All right. I can't do it anymore with Kamala. Get her off the screen. I can't do it. I don't want to torture you anymore. I apologize for that. That is just too much. Oh, my gosh. All right, let's close it out with this. Let's close it out with this. Here's Kathy Hochul. I mean, how do you even properly present this? Kathy Hochul doesn't think you, a black man, knows what a computer is. Clip 9.
Young black kids growing up in the Bronx who don't even know what the word computer is. They don't know. They don't know these things. And I want the world open up to all of them, because when you have their diverse voices innovating solutions through technology, then you're really addressing society's broader challenges.
Black men don't know what a computer is. Kathy Hochul. Black men don't know what a computer is. What in the hell is she talking about? My goodness, are Democrats racists? I mean, they are just truly bigots. But here's an oldie but a goodie. So this is when Joe Biden claimed that black people don't know how to register on the internet. They don't know how to use the internet. So according to Democrats, if you're black, you don't know how to use the internet or a computer. So here's an oldie but goodie. One black man decided to do a comedic video in response to that, and we'll let it take us to break here. Clip 10.
A lot of people don't know how to register. Not everybody in the community, the Hispanic and the African-American community, particularly in rural areas that are distant and or inner city districts, know how to get online to determine how to get in line for that COVID vaccine. A lot of people don't know how to register. Not everybody in the community, the Hispanic and the African-American community, particularly in
I think we need to remake this now with Kathy Hochul saying black men don't know what computers are. What an embarrassment. Know how to.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've got devastating footage here. It's devastating for Donald Trump. I don't know how he's going to recover from this. We have the footage. It's been leaked of Stormy Daniels spanking Donald Trump while he was in his famous silk underwear. We have it now, guys. Go ahead and roll clip 5.
Going, you're standing right next to me.
There you go. That's Biden groping girls at the White House. Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. The touchy-feely, the necking.
Come to my
Do you remember that, Jordan?
Uh-huh. There you go.
No, not smile. Little,
no, don't do it, Joe. Don't do it, Joe.
Hey, Angel, how old are you? You're 12. What's your name?
Some hair stroking. More hair stroking.
The problem is, you know,
even more hair stroking.
You got a heart. Yeah. You know what
I mean? All right.
So I was just stroking the little girl's hair.
I like kids better than people.
Grabbing that little face. Now he's about to give this tiny little girl a, I don't even want to say it, but we see it there. Here he's grabbing the little girl's neck right here.
Do you know what my dad used to say? Your granddaughters have one important job.
Now the sniff job. I mean, has anybody put like the total ultimate compilation of all the Biden groping and sniffing and necking? I mean, it'd be like half an hour long, probably. You've got the classic C-SPAN footage of him groping and grabbing and sniffing. You've got the campaign footage where he's groping and grabbing and sniffing. Remember when he like really got up into that baby's neck and just gave it a massive sniff on the campaign? Remember when he would go and talk to find little girls in the audience at the campaign? He'd say, oh, how old are you? Oh, come meet me backstage after the show. Or remember he was walking the White House grounds and he just stops out of nowhere and then he goes and grabs two girls by the hand and just takes them back to the White House. And can you imagine the helpless feeling as a parent? It's like the powerful gangster predator just took your daughters and there's nothing you can do about it. You just sit there and watch as your daughters are now being taken back room by Joe Biden. So, I mean, the ultimate Biden compilation of all the groping and sniffing and inappropriate comments towards children would be probably at least half an hour. Yeah, I remember when Jeff Sessions knew that Biden was a groper. The Secret Service used to have parties and they had to cancel them, their birthday parties. They had to cancel them because when Biden was the vice president, he'd go around groping the guests. And then they're going to have Trump have to sit in that courtroom with Stormy Daniels talking about spanking him with a magazine. As this creep with his daughter writing in her diary about how he would inappropriately shower with her when she was, you know, like 12, 13 years old. Oh my gosh, it's just disgusting. It's just disgusting. Now, oh yeah, that's when he got the touchy-feely on Eva Longoria. Maybe we forgive him for that one. I'm kidding. All right, here's some of the other news. Marjorie Taylor Greene. Now, the liberal media is reporting that Donald Trump is coercing Marjorie Taylor Greene to stop the motion to vacate and to support Mike Johnson. Now, it's like CNN and I think maybe ABC or others that are reporting this. So I don't know if you want to really trust those sources. That's what's being reported. And the latest is that Marjorie Taylor Greene is withholding the motion to vacate and kind of just holding it over Mike Johnson's head as maybe leverage. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene is seemingly retreating from her threat to hold a referendum on Mike Johnson's speakership this week, after repeated meetings with the GOP leader. The Georgia firebrand is backing away from her pledge to hold an imminent ouster vote, now saying the small band of conservative rebels will continue to watch Johnson's actions moving forward. The speaker was widely expected to survive any attempted firing, as the Democrats committed to keeping him in. She says, "We will see. It's up to Mike Johnson." My hope here, and I always say this, and maybe there's some, it's kind of just firing from the hip, but there just needs to be more strategy from Republicans. You don't even need to be unified. I mean, you could govern better if, you know, that's what they like to say. We need to govern more efficiently. Well, you could legislate better if you had unity in the party, but it doesn't even matter anymore. half the Republican Party is as corrupt as the Democrats. So it really doesn't even matter. I think that if you do the motion to vacate, you just got to be ready to go on the offense. You got to be ready to fight in the info war, the narrative war, and tell the American people, yeah, you're right. Damn right we're causing chaos in D.C. Yeah, damn right. We'll oust the next speaker, too. Everyone in this damn city's corrupt. That will win you votes. That will win you support. That's the message. Yeah, we're part of a corrupt Congress. Yeah, we got a corrupt speaker. Yeah, he cares more about illegal immigrants than you. Yeah, he cares more about Ukraine than you. Yeah, he cares more about Israel than you. So we ousted him. What do you want? Is that what you want? You want someone that cares more about every other country on earth except yours? Then you can have Speaker Johnson. And you win the narrative war. Why? Now, okay. Do you know, have you heard about Henry Cuellar? Axios headline. Why Capitol Hill is so quiet on Representative Henry Cuellar's indictment. Do you know why? Can you tell me why? Because he's a Democrat. That's why. Henry Cuellar's indictment met with silence on Capitol Hill. Because he's a Democrat. What to know about Henry Cuellar's $600,000 bribery scandal? Democrat leader defends Cuellar. Charges very different from Santos and Menendez. Well, yeah, they're different than Santos because what charges did Santos really even have? Not bribery. What crime was Santos found guilty of? Nothing. But Cuellar and Menendez took bribes. But what's the real difference between Santos and then Menendez and Cuellar? Well, Santos is a Republican, so he immediately was removed from Congress by Republicans, by the way. But Menendez is still there. Cuellar will remain. Democratic hopes of retaking Congress threatened by allegation of wife corruption. So I guess they're going to try to blame it on Cuellar's wife, or they're going to try to blame it on Menendez's wife. Oh, and my wife. Yeah. Oh. Mm-hmm. And Nancy Pelosi's husband making all the money. Oh, yes. What a perfect excuse. Charges against a congressman lay bare foreign government influence attempts. Cuellar aide eager to help feds make bribery case, lawyer says. The Justice Department alleges that the Texas political consultant Colin Strother was a go-between for payoffs to Representative Cuellar and his wife. His lawyer says Strother wants the truth to come out. But don't worry. Don't worry. Menendez, caught in the bribery scandal, will remain through the rest of the session. Cuellar, caught in the bribery scandal, will remain through the rest of the session. But you'll have Republicans like Mike Lawler and Mike Johnson who will vote to oust George Santos because of campaign finance violations. Oh, I see. So they cost themselves a seat in the House because they just have such more integrity than the Democrats. Yeah, and then they suck on it all night, too. But don't worry. Hey, you're a Democrat. You get caught in bribery scams. You're a Democrat. You get caught with, literal gold bars and suits and cars. You're fine. Nobody's going to vote to oust you. All right, I'm going to clear up some of the odds and ends here to finish this hour. Here's some headlines dealing with the situation in the Gaza Strip. And then it's hitting our streets as well. Hamas admits that several of the hostages they plan to turn over to Israel are already dead. Oh, who reported that weeks ago? That's right, right here on the InfoWars War Room, we told you that. Duh. And now that Israel went into Rafah last night, the ceasefire deal will probably be... how is that even a ceasefire? It's not. So there is no ceasefire deal. It was broke. And Israel goes into East Rafah, probably condemning whatever hostages remain to death. Holly presses Garland to probe dark money's role in fueling anti-Israel agitators on campus. It's the same groups that did it for Black Lives Matter and Antifa and the Women's March and all the anti-Trump stuff. What were some of the other groups like By Any Means, BAM? They had all kinds of crap that they funded. Same people. And we all know who it is. Representative Josh Gottheimer, I am proud to introduce new bipartisan legislation with Representative Steele. It's always bipartisan on these issues. to create an October 7th remembrance curriculum. 10-7 was the deadliest day for Jews since the Holocaust, always reminding you. By teaching about that awful day and the hate that followed, we combat surging anti-Semitism. Now, so they want the narrative of October 7th to always be there so that they can create the groundwork now for permanent support of Israel no matter what they do. And again, I mean, I'm not going to hark on this, but it's like terror attack is imminent at this point. And it's going to be used to further Israel's foreign policy or the United States foreign policy. But see, that's what they do is they have these events where there's a stand down, like on September 11th or like on October 7th. And then they use those events and the scars, and the emotional damage and the death and everything else to form a narrative and then have permanent support. So, oh, you'll never forget about October 7th. Now, permanent support for Israel, no matter what. Oh, you'll never forget about September 11th. So permanent support for the war on terror, no matter what. Oh, yes, the old game. How much did Democrat representative from New Jersey, Josh Gottheimer, how much does he get from AIPAC? $212,000. Nice. And then it's on your streets. This is worse than January 6th. Pro-Palestinian mob chanting to escalate the violence here in clip 12. Now, this is an interesting development. Now, I'm going to get into more of this with my guests upcoming in the third and final hour here. I wasn't sure that they could really manipulate these crowds into violence like they did with Black Lives Matter, because there's kind of the history there. There's the history of racism. There's disenfranchised Black Americans. There's anti-white bigotry that a lot of them harbor. So it's you know, it makes sense that you can rile up that group and then get them to riot and do mob rioting, you know, using an instance like George Floyd or Michael Brown as the inciter, as the spark. But I was thinking, I don't know if you can really do that with these leftist groups over Israel and Palestine. I just don't know how they're going to drum that up. But now you see how they're going to do it. Because, and I see all these videos. I didn't want to play them all, but I see all these videos. There's genuine hatred there. See, you can't incite mob violence without people having hatred in their hearts. And people would always ask me, oh, you know, I'd go out on the streets. I'd be one man in a mob of liberals that hate my guts. They say, oh, and then with attacking me, spitting on me, all this crap. They say, oh, and how do you not lose your cool? How do you remain calm? How do you not strike one of them? Well, because I don't have hatred in my heart. Folks, you can see when there's these standoffs on both sides, these people have hatred in their hearts. And maybe it's just in their DNA. These two groups have been fighting one another for thousands of years. So when you hear that speech, now I see the angle. So the angle is to find, I guess these are Arab groups or Palestinian groups or Muslim groups that are really invested into this anti-Israel sentiment, that are really invested into this Jew hatred, and use them like you use disenfranchised Black Americans to incite and start this mob violence. So it looks like that's the angle. So that's great. So you come to America, you come to the United States of America, a Christian nation for freedom and prosperity, and you bring the same hatred and holy war into the streets of America. Disgusting. Disgusting. But this is so above their head, they don't even understand it. Go fight in
Palestine. Go fight in Gaza. You wave the Israeli flag. Go fight in Palestine. Go fight in Gaza. That's where this belongs. That's where it's been for thousands of years. And now you're going to call for violence and escalation in the United States of America? Disgusting. But I see it now. Now I see it. Just as they used disenfranchised black people and used narratives and propaganda to incite the mob violence, they're going to do the same thing with these groups, except it's going to be disenfranchised Arabs or Palestinians or Muslims that genuinely hate Jews, probably passed down for generations, and now they're going to call for violence in the United States of America. Escalate. So they're really building this up. I'm going to get more into that with my next guests. That's just crazy. By the way, I forgot to kind of mention this earlier, talking about the Cannon case, the Judge Cannon case, where Jack Smith admits to tampering with evidence. I mean, that should be a crime. He should probably go to jail. Federal judge indefinitely postpones Trump classified documents trial. And that's because the prosecuting attorney, the special counsel, tampered with evidence. It's kind of like a lot of people don't understand with the OJ case. Like, well, why did OJ Simpson get off? Well, they were tampering with evidence. They were tampering with the crime scene. So it's like, okay, that's it. Can't trust anything now. Toss the whole case. Oh, but when you're going after Trump, then, you know, postpone now, maybe toss tomorrow, though. Maybe they'll toss it tomorrow. Also, this is breaking, too, with all the vaccine news. AstraZeneca withdrawing COVID vaccine months after admitting rare side effects. So it's Johnson & Johnson now. It's Pfizer. It's AstraZeneca. It's just every single one of them. And the New York Times writes front page headlines. People are having devastating side effects from the vaccines, but is anyone listening? Yeah, the New York Times is not listening, actually. That's ironic, isn't it? All right, we're going to get more into the Israel-Palestine issues coming up next in these protests. I've got guests coming on about this in the final hour. Folks, remember to support us at InfoWarsStore.com. We sell great products, products that I love, products that I take every day, like DNA Force Plus, products like Bodies, products like, I got it right here, actually, Brain Force Ultra, Brain Force Plus, 40% off InfoWarsStore.com. Great supplements. I'm a product of the products at InfoWarsStore.com. A lot of people take fish oil for the cardiovascular benefits, for the neurological benefits. We've got the Ultimate Fish Oil, 40% off. The Nitric Boost, this is a very key product dealing with cardiovascular health and blood flow. It's all about vasodilation. Nitric Boost, 40% off at InfoWarsStore.com. And this is what all, you know, anybody who takes their health seriously is doing something for cardiovascular health, something for blood flow. And so that's why we present Nitric Boost, 40% off at InfoWarsStore.com. It's a no-brainer, folks. You shop at InfoWarsStore.com and you get a great product in the process. And don't forget also, for the time being, while supplies last, 10% off all storable food supplies and water filters at InfoWarsStore.com. All right. We got a short break. I'm going to cover a couple videos and then my guests coming up. Well, the wokeification of America's fine institutions is continuing here. The Boy Scouts of America rebranding to be more inclusive. They are now Scouting America. Remember when they marched with the gay flags a couple years back with the kids waving the gay flag? So the Boy Scouts, what was once a fine and respected institution, is now gay and woke. Congratulations for Scouting America. And so they had some problems, obviously, with leadership. And then they thought, well, I have an idea. Let's go gay. The organization, steeped in tradition, has made seismic changes after decades of turmoil, from finally allowing gay youth to welcoming girls throughout its ranks. It's like, hey, we've got some problems. We had maybe some abuse going on with some leadership. So I have an idea. Let's invite gay kids in. Yeah, that'll be great. Hey, ho, ho. Hey, wave a gay flag here, buddy. It's like, what?
You're steeped in turmoil, and so the solution is gay kids. That seems like it would be the turmoil. This is the clown world, though, see? This is the clown world. And everybody knows Joe Biden is the joke. Jon Stewart torches Joe Biden at Netflix is a joke fest. Says he shouldn't be president. Jon Stewart says, I'm not saying that Biden can't contribute to society. He just shouldn't be president. So maybe they're going to do the old switcheroo. Maybe Big Mike. Is Big Mike the man for the job? Can you imagine? I mean, who are the Democrats even going to put on a debate stage against Donald Trump? Joe Biden says he would do it. He won't. Of course he won't. Maybe the Democrats just refuse all debates now. It's kind of like Carrie Lake's opponent refuses to debate her. Cowards. Ex-CNN reporter says she is haunted. She is haunted after having dinner with closeted Trump supporters who seemed normal. Yeah. So they are normal, and you're the freak show. Michelle Kaczynski, 50, took to social media Sunday to describe the recent dinner. She's traumatized. Are the Trump supporters in the room with you now? I'd be more concerned if there was a Biden supporter. The D.C.-based journalist served as CNN's White House correspondent until 2020. She also worked at NBC News and has been seen schmoozing with the Obamas. Yeah, it's a big schmooze. She took to her social media account to talk how she is haunted. She is haunted, she says, by a dinner with several Donald Trump supporters who at first glance seemed normal. All were well-educated and successful in their careers, Michelle Kaczynski recalled of the recent dinner party that she described on X. They seemed great on the surface for like an hour, and then they took off their KKK hoods and they came out as Trump supporters. The one-time NBC News correspondent continued, categorizing the Trump-leaning guests as closeted. But slowly, over a few drinks, they began to let slip their true MAGA natures. Oh, my. So imagine, you're sitting there having a good time with some people, and they're like, oh, yeah, you know, I kind of think we should have strong borders. Oh, my gosh. You're not one of them, are you? You're not a Trump supporter. Oh, you can't get along with somebody that has different ideological views? You can't get along with somebody that has different political views? Now, why? See, notice, because they'll talk about, oh, gays had to be in the closet because they were scared that they would get beaten up or they were scared that they'd face homophobia. Well, why do Trump supporters have to be in the closet? Because they're scared liberal lunatics are gonna assault them, judge them, all this other crap. Just like this psychotic ex-CNN reporter. She's haunted, folks. She had dinner with a Trump supporter. She may never recover. She might never recover, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, TikTok, ByteDance, sued to block U.S. law seeking sale or ban of the app. So that saga continues. All right. Joining me next is Suleiman Ahmed, and we're going to talk about what's going on right now with Israel, the Gaza Strip, the Palestinians, and the protests. We'll be right back. Ahmed joins me now. You can follow him on X, very popular account there. Sheikh H. Suleiman. I'm probably butchering that, so apologies. He's been all over doing media rounds discussing the situation between Israel and Palestine, and he joins me now. Suleiman, what is the fate, do you believe, of the Palestinian people given the trajectory of events since October 7th and the invasion in eastern Rafa last night?
First of all, thank you for having me on. And I do apologize. I don't have my normal setup. And the reason for that is I'm in Miami. Right. So in terms of the Palestinians, unfortunately, what we thought was happening in October, in November, in December, we're seeing the final culmination of that right now, which is that they want to ethnically cleanse the people from the land. They want to genocide them, and they want to remove them entirely from the land because the coup charter clearly states that they want the entirety of the land from the river to the sea. And they're basically enacting that plan, Netanyahu is enacting that plan in real time. And so when you look at it in terms of Rafah, they are about to attack Rafah, despite the United States, the United Nations, and many other countries who've said, do not invade Rafah. And despite that being the case, Israel, being the country that it is, where it basically autonomously oppresses people, autonomously acts and infringes international law, have basically, as you said, began the invasion of east of Rafah.
Why do you think the UN and the international courts, who've condemned Israel's actions multiple times, have basically just waved the finger and then nothing happens?
Well, it just shows with the US, they're in a tough spot, right? Because you basically have a scenario where Israel controls the United States and it controls my country, which is the United Kingdom, in terms of from the government perspective, from the military industrial complex perspective, from the media perspective. So when that control is there, US is in a tough spot because they've placed themselves as the arbiters of morality, of ethics. They talk about the importance of imparting democracy throughout the world. But when this has happened, remember, they spoke about Russia. The ICC went and issued arrests against Vladimir Putin. So when you've got this scenario and you've placed yourself and positioned yourself in this situation, and then you've got somebody who essentially controls your government acting completely diametrically opposite to the values that you claim that you hold, it exposes you. And so in my view, you're seeing Biden kind of make these attempts or these claims to say that, look, we disagree with what you're doing. Don't do it. But in reality, nobody's going to stop Israel and no one's able to do so. Now, the question people are saying is, or some of the Zionists are saying is, well, Israel's an autonomous country. The US shouldn't be even acting against them or speaking against them. But how can you say that when in reality, there was a bill just signed recently where $21 billion were going to be sent to Israel? And it demonstrates that not just from a financialist perspective, from a military perspective, it's the US who support Israel. This isn't might is right. This is a country that is relying on the world to help support it. And then it's using that support to oppress the Palestinian people, to kill above 40,000 people, the vast majority of them women and children. So when you have that scenario, it's only done in that way. So the real question for Americans, because I know you're in the United States, and for you, maybe it's more important about the United States. The real question for you is, and the same issue in the United Kingdom, people are struggling. I walk through the United Kingdom and I think, what, things are hard. And then whenever I come to the US, I'm like, it's unbelievable. It's a million times worse. The poverty is worse. You walk down the streets and there's people literally camped out in tents in LA and various other, in Philadelphia and so on, and many other states and cities. And then you're sending the money abroad. You had a new speaker who came in and immediately, rather than being concerned about Americans and their struggle, we had a report recently saying Americans have to choose. Am I going to pay my bill or am I going to buy some food? And despite ignoring Americans, the first thing he did is send money to the foreign nation and say they're going to send money to Israel. So this is a huge problem from all aspects.
Well, I actually talked to somebody in England last night who was talking about the economy over there and how gas prices are nearing, with the conversion rate, about almost $10 a gallon. I mean, here in Texas, we're flirting at about $4 a gallon. These are the issues that our country should be concerned of. Now, I have seen some of the protests going on in the UK. It doesn't seem to have gripped the UK like it has the United States, or are we just not seeing it as much?
It's both. So with the UK, there are protests, but what you've got in the UK is our police isn't as harsh as your police has been. The Zionists haven't basically got their National Guard, as you would call it, but they're basically the powers that be to attack the protesters. So in the US, if the police hadn't gone in so harshly, hadn't attacked the protests in such a significant manner, it may have even died down. It may have just been a very peaceful protest throughout the world, but they were concerned about the media. And so when the actions of the police were so harsh and so exaggerated, you basically have a scenario where this perpetuated and made it into a bigger cause. In reality, when you look at this, we've seen many protests before. And the example is the BLM protests. Look how far they were allowed to go before the police even were willing or considering intervening. And yet these protests, despite being almost completely peaceful, the police went in extremely harsh. I knew people, reporters on the ground, and they were like, these kids are just sitting there and the police are just coming in and attacking them. So when this is happening, and they're doing it specifically because Zionists control your country, a foreign nation controls your country, you no longer have autonomy, then you're going to have this situation. You know, the greatest irony is they told the Americans, they told the Brits, oh, Muslims are going to come take over your countries. The CCP is going to come and take over your country. Russia is going to come and take over your country. But in reality, your country was appropriated internally by a foreign nation, and that is Israel. And whenever you have a foreign nation, they're always going to put their interests before the interests of your nation.
What do you think is the dynamic between Iran and Netanyahu right now? Because to me, it seems like they're cutting backroom deals. I feel like most of it is saber rattling. I think that the Iranian regime wants to stay in power, so they kind of they puff up their chest and threaten Israel, but they don't really mean it. And they're cutting backroom deals with Israel. They're both getting paid by the Biden administration. That's the juice that they're both sucking from the West. Do you think that Netanyahu is cutting backroom deals with Iran and they're putting this public posture of animosity out there? Or do you think there could potentially be real even kinetic warfare between the two countries?
So I don't think Biden paid them. This is money that they were owed, right? And this was an agreement that was made. So it just ended up being coincidental in terms of the money that was released. In terms of whether there's backroom deals, I don't believe so. What in reality happened is in this current situation, you basically had Israel, who again acted outside of its privy and attacked an Iranian embassy in Syria, so attacked Iranian soil. Once you do that, there's going to be a response. Now, Iran is in a tough spot in that situation because they don't want to escalate, because right now their country is in such a situation that they are building extensively. They're both building the economy, the military, and they want to be put themselves in a situation where they're a dominant power. War right now is not a very smart move to make. And so really what happened there was Iran was thinking, do we make an emotional reaction and basically have an excessive reaction that is going to catapult the world into World War III? Because we know, again, Israel isn't going to handle things on its own. It's going to force the US in. It's going to force the UK in. It's going to force NATO in. So do we really want that? And then our country will be destroyed, irrespective of whether you win the war or not. Your country be destroyed. Because I'm a big believer that right now, in current times, it's not easy for one nation state to take over another nation state. And what really happens is the destruction of the land. So when they were making that decision and calculation, they thought, look, it's not a smart idea to do so. So we will respond to demonstrate our strength, but we will do it in such a manner where there is an escalation. Hence why their plan was broadcasted. They told everybody. It was leaked. US knew about it. America knew about it. UK knew about it. You had Jordanians knew about it. The Egyptians knew about it. The Jordanian space was used by Israel, by America. So they broadcast it. And the reason they broadcast it was because they wanted to make sure that, look, it happens, but there's no mammoth consequences for it. And then if you look at Israel's response, the same thing happened. They made it look like they'd won, and Iran made it look like they won. In the end, it was a massive de-escalation. De-escalation happened due to Iran. So yeah, I think that's what happened. I don't think there was like a backroom deal. I think it was more Iran making a calculated, logical, long-term decision.
What do you think is the fate of the Palestinian people? First, they were told that they can have safe harbor in Rafah. Now it is not the case, and Israel is taking the eastern beachfront property of Rafah. So, I mean, really the signal to me there is the best case the Palestinians have is they'll get a tiny sliver of land in southern Rafah that's on the Egyptian border. But nobody is taking them. I mean, Egypt doesn't really want them. It doesn't appear the Arab world wants to take them in. It appears that maybe it's the Western countries that are going to be forced to take on Gazan refugees. What do you think is the fate of the Palestinian people at this point?
So the plan for them, as per leaked documents, is to remove them from the land. Now, when you say nobody wants them, I mean, the problem is that this is their land. It's akin to me saying, I'm in the United Kingdom And United Kingdom is a white country. It's a Christian country. It's become a Christian minority country. That's a separate argument. And we know the reason for that. That's because of the Zionist destruction of the family structure. And so if you look at the United Kingdom, we've dropped by 30% in Christians. So Christianity had 75% 10 years ago. Now it's 47%. But that percentage hasn't gone to Islam, even though they've convinced you guys it has. Islam's only gone up by 1%. The vast majority of that has turned to atheism, because what's happened is the Zionist structure has many fake nationalists under their wings, such as Tommy Robinson. And so what they do is perpetuate these ideas, which is liberal leftist ideas. And what that does is destroy the United Kingdom. So now imagine the United Kingdom. It's a minority Christian country. The white population is also dropping because of population collapse, due to Zionists. And so imagine the population decreased, and then they were thrown out of the country, and you were like, oh, nobody wants to take these guys in. Well, of course, they don't want to. If the Brits won't want to go as well, they fought for this land. They fought for Christianity for decades. So this whole argument that they don't want them is ridiculous. Obviously, nobody wants foreign people into their country. This is literally the ideology of the world right now, which has become very nationalistic. People don't want foreigners in the country because they know the impact it has in terms of the economy and various other things. So this isn't just like we hate Palestinians problem. This is just a natural apprehension against immigration. So what's their fate? Their fate is they're going to be ethnic Israelis. Unfortunately, they will be dispersed. Some of it, they will be dispersed across the Arab world. And yes, some of it will be that they will come to Western nations. And this has literally been the Israeli policy. Destroy the Middle East, cause refugee crisis, and the refugees end up coming to the nations where there isn't, which are stable, and this is what's happening. And this is why I respect the college protesters. I want to mention that because you asked me the question. I didn't go into detail about it. I respect the college protesters so much. They are the most American people that there is. If you look, and what's happened is the media has convinced you to say that protesting is bad, to stop when they stop the highway, that it's bad. To stop these things is bad. Why? Because whenever you do disobedience, civil disobedience, you're doing it against those in power. Who's in power in the United States? It's the Zionist movement. So the Zionist movement, through their media, has made you believe don't protest or don't do civil disobedience. Because who are you going to do it against? You're going to do it against them. Look at American history. How was America made? You guys were made by throwing the Brits out over taxation and representation. You guys protested. Look how the slave trade ended. One of the main men I respect more than anyone is a white Christian man, very religious, John Brown, who in my view was the reason for the end of slavery. So, and if you look at his history, he protested, and then he did civil disobedience. Then he took on the US Army and took over the armory in Virginia. And he did that to an extent where they killed him. He was the first person to ever have a death penalty. And then you look at American history in terms of what happened in terms of the apartheid and Rosa Parks, the Vietnam War. It's entrenched in your history that you protest and fight against power. But such is the power of the Zionists that they made you believe that protesting is wrong. They made you believe that civil unrest is wrong. And they made you believe that civil disobedience is wrong. They basically took the American away from you and made you into Zionist shows.
What do you think is the conclusion for this situation? Does Israel eventually take over the whole Gaza Strip, or where will they eventually stop?
So what should happen and what is going to happen is two separate things. What is going to happen is they're going to take over the entirety of the Gaza Strip. They'll then take over the West Bank. They will enact the Likud Charter that they want the entirety of the land from the river to the sea. But what's worse than that? They then implement apartheid values, where if you're Jewish, you have different rights to people who are non-Jewish. And when I say non-Jewish, it means the Muslims and the Christians. The Christians are speaking out vocally about their treatment by the Zionist regime, how they've abused them. There was even two women that I remember vividly who had been sniped by the Israelis in their church in Palestine after October the 7th. This is the treatment they do. And it's not just the Christians. It's also the Muslims who have been doing it, because this is a Jewish supremacist state. And when I say that, I don't mean it in a racist manner, because people can be Arab supremacist and it doesn't mean all Arab people. People could be Muslim supremacist and it doesn't mean all Muslims. People could be white supremacist and it doesn't mean all white people. But these are Jewish supremacists who believe that they have greater rights than everybody else. And this is the problem. And you see it even within Israel. where there are different rights. For example, the right to return, which is only applied to Jewish people. It means if you're a Jewish person anywhere in the world and you've not even got any link to Israel, just sheer by the sheer nature of you being Jewish inherently, you're allowed to go back to that land. And this is why I say, in terms of U.S. politics, bringing it back, I hold this position because it's very important. I say, dual citizens should not be part of the U.S. So, for example, Ilhan Omar, does she have loyalty to Somalia or does she have loyalty to the United Kingdom? But even people like Laura Loomer, who called me out on your show, and when I offered a debate, she was too scared to debate, although I debated Destiny and destroyed him. She was too scared to debate, but even her, let's take her as an example.
Destroying Destiny in debate is like smashing an ant. So, I mean, let's just, you know, that's not really...
He's better than Laura Loomer, let's be clear. So, coming back, and that's why Laura Loomer's run scared. Right? So
I'll ask Laura again. Well, my next guest...
She's going to be scared.
She said you were a jihadist. I don't believe you're a jihadist. I think that that's really low IQ rhetoric. And I actually like Laura. I respect her. I respect everybody. I hear everybody's viewpoints. Maybe I know you didn't want to debate Adam King, and that's fine. Maybe we can get you to debate somebody else another time. I want to ask you a question, though, so did I hear that correctly? You said that you don't believe Jews should be in the U.S. at all?
No, Jewel citizens.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to make sure that I heard that.
Someone misunderstood what I said before. But dual citizens. So, for example, if you've got Somali citizenship and American citizenship, Ilhan Omar, does she have loyalty to Somalia or does she have loyalty to the United States? Or Laura Loomer, she's not a dual citizen, but does she have other Israelis? Do they have loyalty to Israel or do they have loyalty to America? But also, I say, people who got the right to return. So someone like Laura Loomer is a prime example. She can destroy the United States, as they have been doing, and then go back to Israel based on the right to return. So I said those people should not also hold office. Now, the argument against that is then you're going to say Jews should not be in any government in the United States. And I say, yes, until they take the apartheid racist policy, they should not be in the United States because they could destroy it and then go back to Israel. So this is my position in terms of holding office. In terms of debating, I will debate anybody who's on my level, because the thing is, the person you mentioned, I don't even know who he is. His follower base was like 1,000 followers or something. That's a little... People with hardly any follower base want to debate me all the time. I'm debating Destiny, these big named, big profile, high follower account. I've got a huge following, so I'm willing to debate people at my level or close to my level anytime, any place, anywhere. I was hit up literally within hours about Destiny, and I'm debating him immediately without hardly any prep. So it's easy for me. So anyone who wants it and they're about it, let's bring it. And let me be clear, Destiny is a much better debater than Laura Loomer. So there's no contest in that regard. I've destroyed her on Twitter but in our interactions many of times. Calling all of you out, I'll do it on this, on Owen's show. I'll do it on Fresh and Fit. I will do it on any show. Just bring it.
Okay, well, so what levels? Are you talking about followers? Because to me, levels, I mean, Destiny has the level IQ of, like, you know, some little girl's doll that she plays with until she, you know, grows up. I mean, that's like, really, you shouldn't brag about that. That's my opinion. I would say Adam King is a high intellect guy. Huh?
Who?
I would say my next guest is a high intellect guy. He doesn't have as many followers as you. But I'm saying, so what, if somebody responds and says, hey, I'll debate Suleiman, how would you measure whether they are worthy?
Okay, so how I would measure, because remember, people with like 5, 10, 15 followers, they want to debate me all the time. I would measure it based on the impact they're having on society, the level of followership they have, the level of impact they're having, so that when I take them on and destroy them, it is monumental. So Destiny, although you're right about him, he is probably the most number one pro-Zionist debater, and he is a million times better than Laura Loomer. It's not even close. So this beating him, I know he's saying about boasting, but in reality, he's the number one guy, and he was taken out. Laura Loomer is, like, really bad, and hence why she's scared of me. He called me a jihadi, but listen, show me one position I have that is extreme, because actually Salafists, who are quite extreme, basically don't like me because they think I'm not extreme. And if you look at my articles, I call out extremism within Islam, extremism within Judaism, extremism in all religions. This is why they can't handle me. This is why they're scared of me, because all of the rhetoric that they used to does not work on me. So this is what it is. And finally, my last point is, what is the solution? Because people say, look, he's talked a lot. He hasn't got a solution. My solution for the Israel-Palestine issue is apply Western democracy, Western standards. What is that? Equality, Every man is equal, irrespective of race, religion, or creed. You could be a Muslim, you could be a Christian, you could be a Jew, you could be white, you could be black, you could be brown. In the state of Israel, everyone has equal rights. One state solution for all.
All right, Suleiman Ahmed, thank you for your time. Very entertaining stuff. And if we can get you on again, hopefully we can get you in your nice studio. And who knows, maybe we can get a nice seasoned debate with you because I know you're up for it. Thank you for joining us today.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we take a short break. Remember to shop at InfoWarsStore.com if you like this transmission, if you like our guests, if you like our subject material, if you like Alex Jones, if you like the great crew, if you like freedom, InfoWarsStore.com. All right, we're getting our next guest lined up, and we hear all perspectives here. My next guest, Adam King, will probably disagree of a lot of the things that were said there, but Suleiman didn't want to debate with him, so that's fine. We'll just have them both on, and we can hear from both of them. As I'm in the break, I go to get some water in the break room, and Fetterman is on Fox News with Bret Baier, and they're talking about the Israel-Hamas situation. And Fetterman has to kind of lean both ways. He's been very pro-Israel, Fetterman has. In fact, you guys want to play our favorite game here? How much has Fetterman got from AIPAC? But he's been waving Israeli flags at the protesters and such. But he also realizes that there's a big anti-Israel left-wing movement right now. There's a groundswell of it, and so it's not really politically advantageous to be all in for Israel. So he's kind of playing both sides. But see, what's so frustrating when I hear these conversations is nobody seems to want, and this is mostly just the mainstream, but nobody wants to have the full spectrum analysis. And that's why I ask questions like, well, what if it was a stand down on October 7th. Now, I would say that is the case. I would say that's basically already been proven that there was a stand down on October 7th. And Israel basically got caught. And then they just said, oh, well, our security system glitched. Oh, okay, but when Iran's sending in all the missiles, it works fine. So you say, well, you know, Hamas started this, Hamas did this. And so October 7th justifies everything. Well, what if Israel stood down and let that attack happen to justify everything? Does the sentiment still stand? But so now, what they're saying is, and Fetterman just said this, and I've heard this all over, they say Hamas could end this by turning over the hostages. I've been reporting for weeks that the hostages are likely already dead. So how can Hamas end it by turning over the hostages if the hostages are already dead? And don't you think if the hostages were still alive, that the Biden administration would be making a bigger deal about that? So, and they already admitted, Hamas admitted that several of the hostages are dead. And I'm sure that Hamas has killed some. I'm sure that the IDF with their strikes have killed some. Hey, there it is. John Fetterman. $250 million from the Israeli lobby. Yeah. So, I mean, it's the same story every time. But it's like, oh, yeah, because of October 7th. Well, what if it was a stand down? Well, Hamas could end it by turning over the hostages. What if the hostages are dead? So, you see, nobody's doing full spectrum analysis. Nobody's looking at the actual, I would say, mission here, which is pretty clear. Israel wants to take over the Gaza Strip. Maybe the Palestinians get South Rafah and they can pack 1.5 million people into there until Israel wants that too, or who knows how it goes. They'll move them into the West. But that's what Netanyahu wants. That's what he wants his legacy to be. And that's what all of this has been about. But see, you can't be honest about that because everybody's got to be biased, or you can't be honest about that because everybody has their own goals and their own missions. See? Everybody's got their own goals, their own missions, like unlimited funding for Israel, unlimited funding for wars. They want more of that AIPAC money. So everybody's got their own goals. Everybody's got their own angle, their own mission. And nobody goes full spectrum analysis. All right. I think our guest might be having some technical issues, guys. Just let me know the update here. Okay, we're getting our next guest connected. Some technical issues here. But what I want to really hear, and I'm sure Adam may want to push back against some of the things the next guest just said, and that's fine. We hear all perspectives here on this show. But what I'm curious to find out from Adam, he did get into a lot of these protest groups. I'm wondering if they, I'm wondering how easy it was for him to sneak in there. All right, Adam King joins me now. Did you have to buy the Amazon Palestine scarf to sneak into these deals, or did you just go in as is?
Actually, I went in as is. I put on like a military camo hat, and I just snuck myself in. It was intense. I'd like to address, before I get started, the last point of your guest about debating people on his level. I feel like I got to come down levels to debate him. He talks about the only thing that he thinks is valuable is how many followers people had. I don't think this dude has sat with presidents of countries over dinner before. I have. I don't think that this dude, you know, has been a diplomat in other countries before. I have, you know, for America. I don't, you know, there's a specific level, and this dude knows who I am. He likes to play this follower game that you don't have enough followers to debate me. You don't have enough followers to debate me, when like all of his followers were like fed to him by his handlers. So I think he's pretty disingenuous as a person. And I think he's actually ducking out because he's afraid of me. But whatever. We could go on to it. And, you know, he debated me one other time.
I hear from everybody on this show. I like to get along with everybody. I'll platform anybody. I love a good debate. In fairness, you agreed to do a debate. You've pretty much never backed down from a debate. So I respect that about you. I don't want to hem and haw too much about that. You're welcome to get more into that. But really, I want to know if you're ready to move on. I want to know about what it was like infiltrating these protests and what you found out. Because I don't think we're really – some people are talking about, but I don't think we're really talking about what's going on behind the scenes of these things and how these students are getting indoctrinated to where some of them, oh, look, I'm converting to Islam now. I mean, give me a break.
Right. It's like filled with white boy jihadis. Like they're just discovering Arab culture for the first time, and they all hate their white heritage so much, and they all want to become Arabs, and they think it's the greatest thing ever with their masks. You know, they all wear the N95 masks and suffocate themselves. Basically, one thing that I did notice behind enemy lines so deeply is that the stench of the encampment was horrible. It's like these people didn't shower for like 48 hours, and like this collective mass of thousands of unshowered people, like you could smell it. But there were several things that I noticed.
And you were there, at UCLA, right? I just want to clarify.
Yeah, I went deep into UCLA. You can watch it. It's all revealed on my video on Band. There's this like truck that's like parked in the entrance. Of course, with British people, it's always British people that do this mass indoctrination thing. And, you know, it's some British voice, you know, like talking about, you know, why never stop protesting, always be in the streets. And one thing that's crazy is the previous guest, he says that the college protesters are the most American thing happening in America. These people literally hate America. Everywhere you went on this protest was American hatred. Hatred for a white culture, hatred for Christians, hatred for all of America. It's like the only time where like trannies, Muslims, and like ultra right wing tradcons seem to like all get along with each other. And like the amount of disdain for America permeates every inch of the place. Also, at the very end of my video, when you go in, I'm like, it just happened to be like from God, this happenstance that they were like disorganizing, and the mass organizers were sending their people home. And I got it on video, and they were like saying like, oh, report to your mass organization, blah, 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 blah. They have this thing dialed into a science. These are the same people who led the BLM riots in 2020. This is the same group of George Soros, ultra left-wing funded, anti-American, dystopian, establishment-loving cucks. I don't know what else to call them.
All right, I want to hear more about this. Did they offer, I want to know, like, we need to know, did they offer you a trash can shield? Were their bike helmets being passed around? Were they wearing
there
hockey
were
pants?
There were bike helmets being passed
okay,
around.
All right, we're going to get in more. Let's find this in your footage when we come back. All right, final segment here. My guest is Andrew King. He's chomping at the bit to respond to the guest report. I'm going to give him an opportunity at the end here to do so. But I want to learn more about his behind-the-scenes footage and how he captured on video. And if the crew can cue that up, that would be even better. You might be able to, you might need to direct him on that, Adam. But explain what you caught here at the end of this event. I guess as they're rounding up to go home, are they hopping on buses? You said they're checking in with their activist groups. You said they were passing around gear. I mean, talk about the organization.
So the cops came and everybody went running. And I was just like, there's no way I'm going down with these Pally losers. So I ran out and like I like ran to like this parking lot. And there was this group of organizers at the end who were all kind of like, you know, directing people on what to do next as their groups and all their people that they brought in who weren't even students. It was like a paid organization. I also DM'd you on X a short 2-minute video on the funding sources. These people get paid $7,800 every 8 hours they commit to the protest. And so there's so much money that's being dumped into this, and it's not being reported. These aren't students. And that was one of the things that I noticed is like when I was so deep, there was this one moment I was on the bridge filming the truck. There's like this truck that's like has loudspeakers and it's like under the bridge. So you can't really see it from the main protest. You got to like go down to where they were eating pizza in order to like see it. But that is where they're like doing this crazy indoctrination. And it's like where they actually say on the bus, it says the USA is the enemy. And it's written there. I pulled it aside. I showed it. These people hate America. And there it is. When right as the cops start, you know, disengaging the crowd, probably like 4 or 5 minutes, you'll see me the mass organizers kind of sending out debriefing their groups and their followers. And so and that was a big reveal too, because so when I was on the bridge following the truck, this like massive group of like straight up jihadis. These were not students. These were all like full blown jihadis in riot gear with hijab and keffiyeh. They were like all Middle Eastern. They were huge. They were like, they looked like a football team. They were like all 6'5", massive. And they were doing patrols of the area and they were talking. And I'm telling you, Owen, I was terrified because I was so deep. And like they were looking for Jews out there. There was one time this guy came up to me. He's like, I think that guy's an Israeli. And I just like wiggled through the crowd and like got out of there like as fast as I could.
Well, you didn't put on much of a disguise. I mean, you know.
I thought that someone from Right Wing Watch was going to like be like, oh, it's Adam King. Let's get him.
I mean, and Adam, so, this is like the scene in, oh my gosh, what's the movie? Road Trip, when they go to the black frat and it's white dudes and they're like, I mean, you know, you kind of, you didn't really have any disguise.
I was shocked. Honestly, I was with a friend and my friend was like, yo, let's go watch him get arrested. And I was like, okay. And then I was like, while I was there, I was like, I got to film this. If I'm going to do this, I got to film this. And so we went deep in. There wasn't a Jew in sight. That one guy waving the Israeli flag that you played in the sequence was the only Israeli flag. And he wasn't even a Jew. He was like a Mexican or a Maori person. But there was not a single Jew in sight. There were thousands and thousands of these white boy jihadis and these real jihadis. And it got intense. They had like makeshift weapons everywhere. There was explosions. They threw like these little explosive things at the cops right before they came in. I got that. There was a big explosion on my feed. You know, you could tell it was so weird, man. There were so many trannies. It was bizarre. There were like trannies everywhere. Yeah, but it's like Islamists and trannies usually don't mix, and so it's
But that's the thing. This is just kind of the flavor of the month anti-American protest. You know, they always have their different flavors and disguises, but at the end of the
day, that's the truck right there. If you fast forward the image from that truck, you could see on the other side of the truck, the right side of the truck, it talks about America being the evil empire and stuff like that.
They put a lot of work into that truck.
Dude, they did. And that truck was on a single message. It was like a 3-minute message on repeat for weeks. Weeks it was going on. Just indoctrinating students into this. And the craziest thing, I said this with Carolyn Borisenko on my show a few episodes back that nobody seemed to notice, but they're trying to recreate Kent State right now. And so the whole time I was thinking, these cops are going to try to kill a kid or something so that everybody gets crazy. And then it's BLM, it's F the police, defund the police, it's Palestine all over the place. And I felt like that was the goal. And so like that's the real scary part about these protests. If God forbid a cop actually does something, because it's clear, like on that loudspeaker,
or there's any instigator or provocateur. I mean, from either side, it could go either way here.
Right. The mass indoctrination on that truck. They were saying, "This is the largest student protest since the Vietnam War. Congratulate yourselves." There it is, right there on the side of the bus. Right there, it says. The real axis of evil is Britain, Israel, and the United States. So
now, see, here's my problem, and I'd like to find the footage. We're running out of time here. I'd like to find the part where they're on the loudspeakers. And here's the problem. You know, these protesters to me have lost the plot, and they've exposed their true colors. They're just the anti-American left. This is just their flavor of the month. They went out and bought an Islamic scarf on Amazon, and it makes them look trendy or whatever. But they're burning American flags. Now they're saying we need to incite violence. So I support their right to free speech. I even went out there and said, hey, look, we might even agree on some geopolitical stuff. But once you start burning the American flag, once you start calling for violence, you lose me, you lose the plot. And so, unfortunately, they're just going to be – this is just the new leftist front group to bring in the summer of riots and to instigate and cascade into whatever's going to happen before I think it's going to lead to probably violent riots outside of the DNC in August. Before I let you respond to the last guest, though, are we anywhere near where they're on the loudspeakers with the organizers yet?
Yeah, it's like right after this part, as I'm walking away, the next segment that you see where it's just me and I'm like, I'm not going down for this. Like right after that, I like walk by their camp and you could see it. It's pretty crazy. It's like, I don't know what minute, probably like somewhere between 25 and 30. No, they were in a circle and I just like walked through their circle, like straight out the way, and like, it all got picked up on the audio, and I was just like, what? How did I capture that? It was like literally from God. It was unplanned, organic, and I just captured it on accident because I was like running from the cops trying to like get out of Dodge. Right after this, right here. The scene right after this when I walk away.
Let's see. Here, give me some quick audio here.
Yeah, there it is. See?
Wait for the lot 5.
He just said, please text your mass organ.
Text your mass organization once you are safely in your car.
Wow. There it is. There it is. All right, we did it. We got everything I wanted to see. So I'll give you the final 90 seconds or so here to respond to the last guest. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, he says that the protesters were just sitting there peacefully. Let's not forget that this guy is a Pakistani invader into England who believes in jihad and believes in Sharia law. And now he's coming to America, and he just got platformed at AFPAC. For what reason, I don't know. This guy is so not America first. This guy, they always, first of all, I'm a non-foreign aid, America first, constitutionalist patriot. And they're always accusing me of dual loyalty because I'm a Jew. This guy has a singular loyalty, and it's to Islam and to destroy the West. But he's being platformed at AFPAC with mustache, Hitler lookalike, Lucas Gage, and all these other people. Not America first. That's not America first. What were you saying?
No, I'm laughing. That's hilarious. The Hitler lookalike.
Yeah, man. He just like that guy's IQ is like 60, and he just wants to look just like Adolf Hitler. All they want to do is hate Jews. They don't care. Their first priority is to force everybody to become Christian. And then that new America where there's no religious freedom, that's the first. That's America First that they're supporting. And to platform a guy like this at America First, a jihadi invader, it's like these people are so concerned about liberating the Palestinians. Why don't you go liberate Europe from the Muslims before you, and free the white people from Muslim Islamic domination that spread throughout Europe before you talk about Israel? Israelis wave American flags. They are so pro-American. They celebrate the 4th of July. They celebrate Thanksgiving. They do honorary services for veterans.
That's great. Great footage. Thank you for joining us. We're out of time for today. We'll see you tomorrow. Stay classy, football warriors.